We're sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
No exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls. Just a great podcast app for everyone.
Get it for free in the App Store.
Hey there.
Hey.
What's up?
What's up with you?
Nothing good, just exhilarated.
Nothing good, all bad?
My brain is melting out of my ears.
No, it's okay. So is mine.
Because, I mean, we're gonna tell everyone why with this episode our brain is melting out of our ears.
But we tell them about something else first?
Yeah, let's do the good news first.
Okay. So good news is we've opened up our Patreon to be a pay what you can, which is great.
Yeah.
And news.
So at a minimum pledge of $2, you can be a patron of ours. And that means you get access to all content that we post. So our video postcards, our show notes, our ad-free episodes. So we didn't want to lock content behind tiered paywalls anymore. So everything is for everyone on our Patreon.
Yeah. Honestly, thank God, because those video postcards need to be seen by the world.
And I'm excited for some ideas we have for our video postcards. And so, yeah, you can find that at patreon.com/wisteriagaze if you haven't gone already. And it's a good way to support the show. And now you get everything, no matter your pledge level.
Hell yeah.
The reason why my brain is melting out of my ears is because this episode is cursed.
This episode is cursed. A witch put a curse on us. We accidentally made eye contact with her at the same time, and she was so mad. She cursed us, and she cursed season 2, episode 10.
Yeah, because some of you, you know, if you're listening in the future, this episode isn't late. You're just listening to it. But if you're listening actively, week by week, this episode was late. Because there was one week we needed a little bit of a break, and then we were like, we're gonna dive into it, and then the audio got fucked up on our new recording because
a witch put a curse on us. I think that we'll find nuances, and I think it'll be even tastier.
Well, guess what?
What?
Season 2, episode 10 premiered December 4th, 2005. It was written by Chris Black and directed by Arlene Sanford. For Sondheim Watch, this episode is called Coming Home. I could not find anywhere on the internet if there was a Sondheim song called Coming Home or a song at all written by anyone called Coming Home. So I don't know where this title came from.
Maybe it's like a secret song that Stephen Sondheim hid in a journal and only Mark Cherry saw it.
Only Mark Cherry knows about it. He was like, name the episode that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. For Wisteria International, this episode in Germany was called The Lost Son.
Oh.
Which is interesting. Can obviously apply to multiple suns in this episode.
That's true. Even the sun in the sky.
Even the sun in the sky.
This is the episode
where
it goes out.
Where is she? And in France, this episode was called My Father, That Loony. Which I think is very fucking funny.
Yeah.
We want to dive in?
I think I'm ready. I got my laptop in a plastic bag and I'm ready to go. So we open with a little Mary Alice monologue.
What?
Yeah, I know.
The episodes never start that way. Are you kidding me?
We're doing something a little different this time. And we're talking about somebody we've never met before. Her name is Bree Van de Kamp.
Oh my gosh.
Everybody,
she's cool.
There's so many ways to tell that Bree's a lady.
Really?
Yeah, let me just name off a couple right now.
Rattle those off for me, please. Just rattle.
She always takes a shower. She puts on her pearls.
Oh.
She is very careful to never let others know what she's thinking.
Okay.
And also, she's a well-bred woman.
That's a gross term.
A well-bred woman.
Ooh,
that 100% purebred woman.
She's a pure. She's a purebred white woman.
Yeah.
Aside from Bree's breeding, Bree is showing up to George's house because the cops are there, and the cops are like the cop we've met before, whose name I can never remember, who thought she killed Rex for a second. He's there, but he's really sweet this time because he's telling Bree that, like, hey, we found some of your stuff. Because he had kind of a shrine dedicated to you.
Yeah.
And he,
Some unsavory items.
And he shows her the underwear that George stole that we saw him steal a while ago, as well as something else.
So as Bree is talking to the detective, the other cops in the house carry out this being, this immortal being. She's beautiful.
She's beautiful.
She's frightening. She is a real doll of Bree Van de Kamp. For those of you who do not know what a real doll is,
I don't know that term specifically.
Oh.
I guess it's about, is it sex doll? Is it a sex doll?
Yeah, it's a doll that people use to have sex with. they're also called real dolls because I guess like they look like real people.
This one looked like a store mannequin.
This one did look like a store mannequin.
I feel like George Foley stole a store mannequin, which would which would imply to me that...
Just a little DIY activity. 5-minute crafts. Make your own real doll.
Like he made the mannequin fuckable?
Yes.
Oh, God.
5-minute crafts. Look them up on YouTube. They have a quick, easy tutorial on how to turn any store mannequin into a real doll.
Oh no. I don't even know what else to say about this scene. Everybody kind of, there's kind of a funny bit where the cops are like, she's like, what would they even do with something like that? And all the cops are thinking, fuck it. And it takes Bree a second to catch up to the fact that he may have done some unsavory things with the mannequin of her.
Yeah. That's so fucking weird. I'm sorry.
No, it's gross. It's weird. It's
it's just like, it's of a real person.
Yeah, that's nasty. George is nasty. Yeah. I'm glad he's dead. Goodbye.
Rest in peace. Listen to our memoriam.
Listen to our memoriam about George.
But essentially, that's that scene. There is another quick scene where the Mary Alice monologue comes back, where Bree leaves the house while the cops are leaving the house with the mannequin, and Mary Alice says, Bree always knows how to maintain dignity even in like the worst possible situations.
And then we get the shortened version of the opening credits before we jump into another Mary Alice monologue that begins with her telling us the story as old as time is the return of the prodigal son. And to underscore that, we see the literal return of the prodigal son, that is Zach Young returning to Wisteria Lane. He's back. He's been gone for like 10 episodes.
Yeah, we were like literally minutes before I started watching this episode, we were talking about Zach not being nowhere. And so I'm glad to see him back.
Yeah, I'm glad to see him back too. And I actually really, like, I don't like Paul at all, but I liked this moment of Paul stepping out to grab the paper. He sees Zach and they kind of run into this father-son embrace. And Paul's emotional as he welcomes his son home. And I thought it was pretty sweet. I don't like Paul, but I liked this moment a lot.
Yeah.
And as Zach gets in, he gets a little food in him, and Paul kind of just basically asks him about Susan and the Utah money. But Zach kind of pushes back and asks, well, the Tillmeister told me about who my real mom is. And Paul's a little taken aback by that. And then Zach follows up, do you know who my real dad is?
Mm-hmm.
And Paul fucking lies.
He's a liar.
He's a little lying baby boy. And he tells Zach he doesn't know who his dad is when he knows it's Mike Delfino down the street.
Oh my God. Mike Delfino. Speaking of Mike Delfino.
Here he is.
Here he is right now. He is handing off a faucet or something to Betty. And I think Mike and Betty is an interesting pairing.
An interesting pairing. And then when Edie runs up.
Yeah.
What a wild little trio.
The Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity of Mike, Betty, and Edie.
Yes.
That was such a funny, weird trio to see, but I kind of loved it.
Yeah, so did I. Edie runs up with the newspaper and they all start talking about Caleb, who's on the front page. Mm-hmm. And the police haven't identified him yet. And then Mike says that they're going to put him in a psych ward.
Well, he says he's in the psych ward. So is there one psych ward in the entire city?
Yeah, you know.
it's just a single psych ward.
It's just the psych ward.
I mean, she didn't have to look it up. She just went to the psych ward.
Because Zach had to go out of town when Paul was keeping him
hostage.
That's the city psych ward.
But yes, Betty is sort of like, oh my gosh, how wild that they haven't figured it out yet.
The most obvious.
She's so obvious. It's very funny to me that she, like the apple whites are the season mystery. And Betty has no poker face when talking to people about Caleb.
She's always, there are these TikToks with this person who their main bit is like middle schooler pretend like thinking I'm a vampire after drawing like Sharpie bite marks on me. And the whole bit is just them like looking upwards and like tucking hair behind
their ear.
That's Betty.
That is Betty. Yes. And then I think the transition is kind of cool because we linger on Caleb's picture in the newspaper, but then we see cut Caleb's picture on the newspaper, but it's a different setting. Mm-hmm. We're in an office. There's a gun clip laying on the newspaper. Two gritty guys are talking about how they're going to go into the city for a couple of days, be gone 3 days, don't recycle your ball gags. Weirdly.
Yeah,
there's a lot of asthma going on. This guy has asthma for some reason.
Well, I mean, I assumed these are probably just hitmen.
They seem like it, yeah.
I'm curious. This is working under the assumption right now that, assuming the Fosters hired this man or these people, because mm-hmm. One of them's named Monroe, and that's the one that we're
going
to
Monroe is the one that leaves, and then yes. Jerry is who's in the office with him, yeah.
Yes. How do they know who killed their daughter? Or like, how does somebody know? Maybe I'm just working, because like, how would
wait, you're fucking right, because if they knew who did it, there would just be a national manhunt for this man, Caleb Applewhite.
Yeah,
but it seems like there's like, they're looking for people. You're right, based on all the news we've gotten, like all the news clips from the early episodes,
Nobody knows who did it. Is.
So yeah, but how the fuck? You're fucking right. How would they know it's Caleb? How would they know to look for Caleb?
I don't know.
That's a glaring pothole. Pothole?
Pothole.
Plot hole.
You high right now?
I'm high right now. No, I wish. Yeah, that's like a big plot hole though.
Yeah.
How the fuck would they know to look for Caleb specifically?
I don't know.
Are they just
that's
scanning the newspaper for anybody?
Any possible lead.
Any possible lead? I don't know. You just blew my mind. Can you tell that you just blew my mind?
I can. And I also want to know whatever happened with the letter that Betty sent the police. Because remember, she sent
God. This season... Oh my God. Okay, look, everyone, we have this podcast because we love this show.
I love this show.
This is stupid.
Hey.
The plot holes in the season mystery this season are so much. They never show us the Applewhites, hardly ever. And then now we're realizing, like, that's so many plot holes.
To be fair, I am still waiting out to see if they fill those plot holes, because we're
I
only
hope so. You're right.
At
you're right.
10.
We hopefully so will fill them.
I don't want to speak too soon, but I'm just like bringing some things up.
I need to keep that in mind, because that you're right. Sorry, I'm still thinking about the fact that how would they know it's Caleb? Yeah, you're right. That's so stupid. Oh, I hope they fill them. I hope they fill them.
Maybe this
the plot holes
knows.
And the potholes.
That guy's a thing for faces.
He just kind of like feels the paper, and his psychic powers tell him who killed people. Yeah, that's basically that scene. Monroe's gonna go get Caleb.
Yes,
and then we cut to all the ladies on the porch having mm-hmm. coffee, and there's a lot of scenes in this episode that cut to immediately after information is given, which is nice, so that we don't have to watch the characters relay information we already have as the audience.
It's also nice because it makes the episode last longer. I don't know if that makes any sense. It just feels like it's constructed in a way that is like easily digestible.
Yeah, it's helping it move forward, because we don't have to keep watching the same like regurgitation of the same information we already have.
Yeah.
And so Bree has just told them all about the George stuff. The ladies are shocked that George did this and offer their condolences to Bree. She kind of warns them that they may see some of it in the paper, and they make kind of comments that they're glad he's gone. And Gabby is like, I hope he suffered. And Bree just keeps them little lips shut tight. And Bree makes a face and is like, maybe, I don't know.
who
would fucking know? Who knows?
As they were talking, who else rolls up right now?
Oh, little prince.
The other prodigal son.
The other prodigal son.
Susan,
the prodigal son.
I was thinking about her. I don't know why.
Like the three prodigal sons and their parents. Zach, Andrew, and Susan.
Susan. But it's Andrew.
It's Prince Andrew.
Yeah.
I've missed my evil little gay prince.
I've missed him so much.
I'm so glad he's back. And then we cut again to another another scene that's immediately after she's told him all the information. I wrote, I know he's gay because he's drinking a lime diet Coke.
Lesbian the episode, that lime diet Coke.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, so it's Bree and Andrew. She tells him about George, and Andrew immediately kind of goes off on her and is like, you killed, I'm still mad at you because you killed my dad. Yeah. Because George did all that because of you.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I understand why he's angry and why he's upset. Obviously, his father's dead. But I think that him immediately blaming Bree feels like too much. Like it she does. And she tries to relent, too, like saying, like, he fooled me. He tricked a lot of people. And Andrew says he didn't trick me. And so I understand Andrew's anger, but also, like, I don't know. I feel like maybe because we like Bree, we're a little bit more understanding that she really didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
When it was going on. So
she was also, like, fully convinced.
Convinced.
That George was a good guy.
Yeah.
And I feel like we've talked about this in a previous episode.
Probably.
The episode where she realizes, maybe I need to break it off with him. Like, sometimes you are blinded by the bad traits in a person until it's
too late.
Too late.
Yeah, and I don't know. I have a lot of sympathy for Bree in the whole situation. And I understand that Andrew maybe is not capable of that right now. Because sometimes I also forget sometimes with TV shows that characters that are supposed to be teenagers, like, they're kids. Yeah. It's like he's a kid, you know? Sometimes I forget that, especially because in TV shows, teenagers quite often act like adults. But, like, he is a kid. And it makes sense to me that he might not fully be able to understand the weight of what happened to his mother as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And he immediately, I like the end of this scene because he gets kind of mean.
He's
and he's
a
like,
mean little boy.
Anyway, my friend Justin is going to stay over tonight.
I'm
going to
bang tonight, Mom. Yeah. You got an issue with that? I'm going to have a lot of hot gay sex up in the room.
My good gay friend Justin and I.
I'm going to have some incredible gay sex tonight, Mom, and suck my ass.
Suck my ass.
That's the actual line that was written in the show. We can't put it in that line in specifically because of copyright reasons, but it was in the show.
It was
Trust
in the show.
Us.
You just got to listen. You just got to listen for it.
Yeah. And then we cut to Addison, my least favorite dad on earth, and arriving at Susan's place. And he's like, okay, I'm here to be blackmailed into being your friend. And she was like, I wasn't actually going to blackmail you, which is what a wild twist from her in the hospital being like, I'm going to blackmail you to immediately pulling back on that. But he's like, okay, cool, I'll spend my lunch break with you, I guess. I don't understand why she wants someone who so reluctantly does not want to have a relationship with her.
Yeah, I think she just likes it's Susan, so she's kind of relentless.
Yes.
And I think she just really, really wants a dad. I think she just really wants one. And like she knows that her biological dad exists and is alive, and like she thought she couldn't have that for so long because she thought her father was dead.
Yeah.
And so to find out that he's alive, I think she just really wants that connection, even though he doesn't.
Yeah, it just sucks. It's like hard to watch because I'm like, girl, he doesn't want this, because we see that like she's showing him pictures of her as a kid, and like that kid doesn't matter to him. Like that kid's a 38-year-old woman, and he doesn't care about all these years he missed. I don't know. She's just trying so hard to make it work. In the end, he does give her a little bit of hope, but still.
He decides when he leaves, he takes one of her baby pictures.
It's still whether shallow.
It's mostly just to please her, I feel.
Yeah.
And that's that scene.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Lynette and Ed, her boss.
I wrote, I would like to nominate Lynette's biceps in this scene for lesbian of the episode, because I could not stop looking at them.
They're good. They're juicy.
They were juicy. They were banging. Her biceps looked great. So I want to nominate them for lesbians of the episode.
Hell yeah. Put them in with the Diet Coke.
Put them in Diet Coke and some biceps. A great afternoon for me.
I just want those to be in the bucket. Nobody else.
But I have so many more.
I know, but just think of how good a bucket of just biceps and lime Diet Coke is. They're swimming around in the Coke. But essentially Lynette is talking about how she wants to start up a daycare because she was looking through company policies, and the company can have one as long as they have at least 16 kids. And she already went around the office and went, listen, I have 15. Your wife just had a baby. If we get her in on this, then it's 16.
We got the Mormon.
Yeah.
And your baby. We're set. Ed thinks, though, that his wife Fran is too attached to the baby, is unwilling to let her go out of her sight for more than a minute, if even that, he doesn't think that they'll be able to pull it off. But Lynette ends the scene by saying she'll try to talk Fran into possibly giving up the baby just for a few hours.
Yeah. And then we go to church. Amen.
Amen.
Gabby kicks the doors of the church open with her heels and clip-clops down the aisle.
Oh, I just imagined Gabby with heels where the heel of them is like a crucifix.
That's funny.
That'd be fashion.
Yeah. And we see Sister Mary Hot Pants, and Gabby immediately starts yelling because Carlo skipped out on a spa day that they were supposed to have. She had to reserve it like 5 months ago or something.
When he was in jail and she didn't know he was going to get out?
Yes.
Gabby, is that when you did it?
Yeah, she was hoping. She had the lawyer. She knew. But essentially, Carlos comes out and is like, Gabby, there's people dying in Botswana, and I'm just helping Mary with these fundraising flyers.
Yeah. And Gabby does this weird, like, can we have some privacy? And then when Mary Hot Pants walks away, the argument is just echoing through this giant church. So clearly Hot Pants is hearing everything they say.
Well, even if they were whispering, the acoustics in that church would have just picked everything up anyway.
So like, why ask for the privacy if you're the... Whatever. I didn't really write exactly what they say in this scene, but they just sort of...
It's the same argument.
It's the same argument they always have. Gabby and Carlos get one argument, and then they can only have that argument for 20 episodes.
Yes.
And we've moved from, you cheated on me, to, I want to be a religious good man. And that's what they're going to fight about for the next 20 episodes.
But it's all... I feel like the residual you cheated on me is still a big undertone for Carlos, at least.
Probably, yes.
And that's that scene.
Yeah.
We then go to Susan. She gets a call from Papa Addison.
Papa Addy.
And Papa Add... Papa Addy.
We're not indul...
We don't endorse drug use.
Yes. He's calling her to come bail him out of jail.
Yeah. And when Susan goes to do just that, we find out he was arrested for solicitation. He was with a sex worker.
There's nothing wrong... Like, there's nothing wrong to me for, like, employing sex workers.
No.
But I hate the way he acted about it.
And also, I think there's something wrong with cheating on your wife in this way.
Oh, for sure. Cheating. Yes.
You can't call your wife, so let's just call my fucking daughter, I guess.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. He's fully taking advantage of Susan's kindness.
Yeah.
And I hate older men like him that act like fucking teenage boys when it's like, I can't believe the thing I actively made a choice to do is my fault, and I have to have consequences to my own actions.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Like, I just hate men like him. I just really dislike Addison so much. So I just hated the way he was like, it wasn't my fault. And it was like, yes, it was. You actively approached like a woman that is not your wife, and then you're gonna act like a little baby when you get arrested for it.
Yeah. Susan does call him out a little bit in this scene, because he's like, I just wanted to have sex, and then she went, have sex with your wife.
Yeah, I just felt like Susan was very valid in this scene, but I also feel like she didn't owe him this. She didn't owe him this kindness, and he is taking advantage of her kindness, and she still wants to have coffee with him.
Yeah. And she drops him off at home, and when she drives away, his wife, Carol, is across the street.
She's peeping.
Yeah, she takes down Susan's license plate.
I wonder what that will lead to.
Oh, who knows? I don't. I'm watching this episode right now.
And then we see that we're back in the church. Amen. Hallelujah.
You came from heaven to earth.
Oh, no. There is an information meeting for the relief trip, and the priest walks up, the priest we met in season one, actually. He walks up and says, hey, and he's like, Abby, what are you doing here? And he mentions to her that this trip is always really big and really important for the church every year, but because of budget cuts, this year they had to kind of minimize the amount of people going on the trip, which is just so heartbreaking because Sister Mary Hot Pants always goes, and she loves going, and this year she can't go, so I guess she'll have to just stay here next to Carlos.
Right next to him.
Oh, wah, wah, wah.
But wait.
Wait.
Mackenzie.
What?
That's not what happens.
What?
Gabby so graciously, and not selfishly at all.
Not at all.
Just from the bottom of her giving
Christian heart.
Amen.
Amen.
She asks the priest how much money they need to cover the cost of the trip.
And she cuts that fucking check right then and there.
Yeah, she does. And we find that out right away because the priest interrupts Mary and Carlos and goes, or not Carlos, just Mary. Right?
Just Mary, yeah. Mary and Sister Greta.
Yes. And he says that they got the money.
They got the money.
So Mary can go.
Oh my gosh.
But what? Mary and Gabby do exchange a glance.
I just want Gabby and Mary to fuck.
Yeah, so do I.
Just get it over with, ladies. I actually didn't nominate Mary and Gabby, but I nominated Mary and Greta for lesbians of the episode.
Sure.
Just because I love lesbian nuns. There's great books out there actually about lesbian nuns if someone's really interested in them. And the way they hugged each other was just very sweet. So I was like, oh, they're lovers.
You know what?
Can they go in
Let's
the biscuit?
Let's let them swim around in the Diet Coke.
And the lime Diet Coke.
You're right. The lime mm-hmm. Diet Coke.
Yes. But yeah, Gabby for sure checks and mates Sister Mary Hot Pants and is like, get the fuck out, bitch.
And let's go back to work.
Okay. I'll grab my briefcase. I'm going.
So we're at work. Lynette is in this powerful suit and Fran walks in with her baby. And I would just like to point out very quickly that this baby... I thought there was going to be a weird plot point where the baby wasn't real because Fran is just holding a mound of blankets.
I didn't notice that.
We never see the baby's face. There's two scenes with this baby where we do not see the face.
I never noticed
that. And I was going to be so scared. It was going to be like, I can't let you have my baby. And it was just like a doll. Like,
I did not notice the baby was fake.
Yeah. I think it was ultimately just like... they couldn't get the baby for this scene. Like, maybe the baby was fussy, or maybe it was, like, a late shoot or something.
Yeah, or it's just, like, you know, sometimes it's, like, hard to coordinate working mm-hmm. with babies. Speaking of fake babies in Christianity, when I was 4,
okay.
there's a photo of this. I could post this photo.
Please do.
There's a photo, because I was never raised in a church, but for some reason, when I was really little, my grandmother, like, volunteered me for her friend's church things.
Okay.
I was volunteered to be in the nativity scene one year for Christmas, and I was Mary.
I was Mary, too,
Oh my gosh, we are so connected. So my baby Jesus was some, like, the jankiest, most torn apart baby doll.
Shit.
My Jesus had one arm, one eye, and no legs. And it was just like, had like Sharpie marker all over his little forehead. And it was just wrapped in blankets. And I remember looking at this fucking mangled baby Jesus and was like, why am I here? And and I hated the boy that played my Joseph. And so the photo of that I have of me as Mary, I'm just the most sour-faced, angry child of all time.
That's so funny. That's so fun.
I just thought about like, what if that was the baby?
That was just the baby.
One-armed. Like, it looks like the baby in fucking Toy Story, just completely fucked up.
Oh my God.
Yeah. A personal anecdote
so
for you.
That is Mindy.
That's Mindy.
It's my Mindy headcanon. Essentially, the scene is this woman,
Fran, being a fucking bitch.
Yes, she does not want to leave her baby alone. She gets into some weird parenting things. She says that she's not in a position to let her baby, like, be away from her, that she's a mother and she has to raise her child, and how could anyone ever be a parent and not want to just be a stay-at-home mom? And Lynette tries to make the argument being like, well, I'm a mother and I'm in a situation where I have to be working.
Yeah.
So, like, my husband is at home with the children. And this woman just, like, talks down to her just to be like, oh, well, I guess that's what makes me a great mother, not just a good one.
She's such a bitch.
There's so much policing around parenting, just in general.
Yes. And I think that, like, I don't know, not that I was expecting Fran to be, like, a feminist icon, but, like, the whole, I feel like one of the most bare minimum things of, like, feminism, it's about not judging what other women want to do, because I feel like for so long, feminists put down stay-at-home moms of, like, why would you give up your independence, and da-da-da. Like, it's about respecting everyone's choices, and, like, respecting what everyone wants to do with their lives. And there's nothing wrong with the fact that Fran wants to be a stay-at-home mother and really dedicate her life to her baby, but there's nothing wrong with Lynette wanting to work and take care of her family. And I just am annoyed at Fran. I think she's very mean, needlessly so, to Lynette, because I think Lynette's a great mom.
Yeah,
I say as her kids are in the street when she comes home at night. But in general, Lynette's a great mom.
Yeah.
And Frank can suck my ass.
It's just different parenting styles. And there's like not one way to be a good parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. She was so rude. I was annoyed as hell.
Yeah.
But then we get one of my favorite moments in the history of the entire series.
We get Froman.
Froman. Alberta Fromm. I had too many more nominees. I nominated Alberta Fromm.
She needs to be...
For Lesbian of the Episode.
She needs to be nominated because her sweater, she has her cat on a leash.
A pink cat sweater.
She's walking her cat.
That's lesbian energy.
Please put her in there.
Get in that bucket.
I say this all the time. Yes. I'm aware of this. But I... 100%. I absolutely love that, like, Alberta and Ida are, like, in every single episode. Like,
I love the old ladies.
It's so weird, and I love it.
I love when these old women come around, because it's always makes me so happy. Speaking of old women, where's McCluskey? We haven't seen her in 100 years. Hashtag bring back McCluskey.
Yeah.
But we got a nominee for Let's Be the Episode. That pink cat sweater and walking her cat.
Yeah.
This bucket is everything I've ever wanted. Lime Diet really Coke, Lynette's biceps, gay nuns, and now Alberta Fromm.
Yeah.
And her cat.
Yes.
Her cat's also a lesbian.
Her cat's drinking the Coke, floating on the biceps.
This is the best bucket we've ever had.
It's like a swimming pool.
This is a swimming pool-sized bucket. Yeah. And I love it. And there's still more to go in.
Do you want to talk about... what Alberta is looking at?
Oh, yes. Alberta is walking her cat. She stops and she is staring, mouth agape, at something. Susan comes out to get her paper, sees Alberta, and is like, hey, Alberta. And I truly don't remember what she asks her, but it's something very casual and normal.
Do you want to kiss?
Do you want to kiss me? Would you like to make sweet, sweet love? Bring your cat and your sweater on over. Yeah. We're going to get down, is what Susan's saying to Alberta.
It's in the episode.
And yeah, you just got to listen to it. We can't put it in the episode, but yeah. But the shot we see is that what Susan does not see is behind her, written in bright red graffiti letters on her entire, like, garage door, is the word whore underlined. And Alberta's just staring at that. And Susan doesn't notice. And I think it's a very comedy queen moment. Oh, I thought it was very funny because when she turns around, she sees the word.
This moment was hilarious.
It only gets better later, too.
Addison just walks up out of nowhere and is like, yeah, it's Carol. And Susan...
yeah, obviously.
Yeah, she's like, you need to tell your wife that you have a daughter so she doesn't do this to me.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't. I can't do that. I don't know what you want me to do. I can't do that, though.
That's up to your wife. Tell the fucking truth. You're a grown man. You dumb asshole. I'm going to fight Addison on behalf of Susan.
I know. You're like, you're steaming right now.
I'm steaming. I'm going to push Susie aside. I'm going to go, Susie, you stay over there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pull out my leather glove. I'm going to throw it on the fucking ground in front of Addison. And I'm going to be like, I challenge you to a duel.
Even if he wasn't a super old man, if he was young and spry, you would still kick his ass.
I would still kick his ass. I'm going to kick Addison's ass. I'm going to fight him, physically, for the things he's doing to Susan.
For now, Edie rolls.
Edie rolls up, and honestly, I don't even know if I can put this into words how much I love this interaction. Can we just put the whole interaction in the episode? Okay, this is what happens.
Hello, Edie. Do you have something you'd like to say?
Nope. That pretty much says it all.
Immediately after watching this, I went Lesbian of the Episode. Nominee, at least.
You know I love Edie.
She's on a pool floaty in
On a pool floaty in there. We haven't had Edie in a while.
Yeah, she won like the first two in a row.
And we thought we would never have any others.
Yeah. Well, she was going to win three times in a row, but then we went, we can't Edie.
I miss Edie.
So do I.
Put her in that pool. Put her in the pool of Lesbian of the Episode.
She's diving in.
Oh, yes. I thought that's one of my favorite interactions in the whole series. I think it's so funny. And that's basically that.
Yeah.
And then we see Gabby arriving home, and Carlos and Hot Pants are in the living room together.
Oh my God, he's cheating on Gabby.
He's fucking a nun.
Gabby comes in, and we find out that Carlos is going to come to Botswana.
What a wild thing.
Truly wild, because if he's going to be gone for 3 months, he just decided to go on that trip without talking about it with his own wife.
That's insane to do that.
Yeah.
To leave for that long and not talk to your partner about it is wild.
Which is why I'm like, I understand that he wants to be a good person, but like Gabby, aside from the Sister Mary jealousy mm-hmm. and like that feud going on, I feel like Gabby is trying to make their marriage work.
Yes.
Like she has apologized. She said, I will do whatever you want to get so you trust me again. And he just doesn't give a shit about her right now. It feels like he just doesn't care about her right now nor the relationship.
No. And I think that like the things like, you know, we were joking about the spa trip earlier, but like things like that are probably the things they used to do to bring themselves closer together. And that's just not what he wants anymore. And yeah. He's just so hyper focused on himself as opposed to fixing their marriage that it really is Gabby trying to pull their marriage together by herself. And I'm sure that's really frustrating for her. And it's made even more frustrating when Sister Mary Hot Pants seems to have such a hold over him that he wants to connect with her and he wants to spend time with her. And that's not his wife. And yeah. So it's like, even if they're not having like a sexual cheating relationship, I feel like he's having a bit of an emotional affair with Sister Mary Hot Pants, because he is, you know, emotionally and deeply connecting with someone who is not his wife. And to the point where he is like, is detrimental to his marriage.
It's also to the point where she was helping him while he was in jail and Gabby had no idea about that.
Yeah, that's weird. That she should have known about that.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
That's kind of that scene, right? Like
that's it for now. Yeah. We then go back to the office. Lynette is saying goodnight to her babies on the phone.
Yes.
And then she starts, when she puts it on the phone, she starts whispering into Ed's ear a little bit, being like, Liliago, you have every right to spend time with Mindy. She is your daughter, too. So you need to talk to your wife and, like, be able to spend time with your kid.
And I agree.
Mm-hmm.
She's sort of doing the same thing she did with Stu, where
has ulterior motives, but the core of what she's saying is correct.
Like, he does, like, the fact that he clearly wants to be with his daughter, and, like, he's not even allowed to hold his own child, mm-hmm. that just feels, like, really possessive and gross of Fran. So, like, yeah, I fully agree with Lynette. Like, he has every right to be a dad, if that's what he wants.
Yeah. Oh, I did write in the last scene with Gabby and Mary, real quick, Mary is lesbian of the episode nominee because she was mean.
Okay. Put her, she's a clone now. She's two of her in the pool.
Yeah, I think they got really close together.
They did look like they were about to angry kiss.
So can we put
them both in there.
Can we clone Mary from earlier?
Yes. And put a Gabby in there. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, back to the scene with Lynette and Ed. He agrees with her and he goes, you know what? I'm going to go home and I'm going to tell her I need to spend time with my kid.
Yeah. And that's that scene.
Yeah. And then now let's go to gay church.
Gay church. Gay men.
That was really funny.
Thank you, King. Wow. Andrew and Justin, gays of the episode.
They are horned up.
I'm surprised they weren't like Boner City playing video games.
We see the return of horny rage fuel.
Oh, you're right.
Because they're like kind of flirting and Andrew like, wants to get kissed.
Fuck you after we play Doom.
And it's so wild because then Andrew starts being like, the rage comes in where he's like, I kind of wish my mom would walk in on us. Like,
can
I want to
imagine Bree witnessing gay sex.
She would have a heart attack, I think.
She would just immediately fall and die.
She'd say, no!
She would turn into dust.
Yeah.
That's a funny way to start it, but I actually did really, like, enjoy this scene in terms of I felt like Andrew was expressing feelings that a lot of queer kids, like, not only feel, but they experience and they completely understand it.
Yeah.
Because he says, and I really loved this line, when he says, like,
last year, when she found out that I like guys, she freaked out. She said that if I didn't change, I'd be going straight to hell. So, since I knew that I couldn't change, it suddenly hit me that one day my own mother was going to stop loving me. So I decided to stop loving her first. That way, it wouldn't hurt so bad.
And I think that's like a very real thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, as I've talked about before in like previous episodes, watching some of Andrew's storyline is weird for me because I connect to it in a strange way.
Yeah.
Not every single thing where I'm like, I need to blackmail my mom. But like, sometimes like growing up and figuring out you're queer, especially if you are not in a supportive environment or if you're in kind of a hostile environment,
yeah,
you just like try to cut off those ties because it's like, personally for me, growing up in a non-supportive environment, I never really came out. But like growing up understanding that I was queer and like no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Like that is a thought I have also had in my life where it's like I need to cut these ties before I get even more hurt or something, you know? Does that make sense?
No, I think absolutely. I think that, yeah,
because it just makes things easier, but it's also hard because then it's like if you just feel like you don't have parents.
Yeah, I mean it's like it's so. I'm not saying anything that is new or original, but it is like it is fucked up that so many queer kids have to experience parents whose love is completely conditional.
Yeah.
Who is conditional on who they are. You know what I mean? And it's just, and I've had friends growing up in the South who were kicked out of their homes, who had to stay with us because their parents just without even a sliver of a thought kicked 14-year-olds out of the home. Like it's like that people have to deal with parents that are, that will stop loving them.
Yeah.
And no child should have to deal with that. And it's awful. So like, I felt like Andrew's scenario is very relatable.
Yeah. Anyway.
I love you.
I love you too.
I love you so much. Hey, guess what?
Hey, what?
I'm your mommy.
Your
now.
Who's my mommy?
Who's your mommy?
That Velma impression.
Who's your mommy?
It was perfect.
I'm your mommy now.
You're my mommy.
Yeah, so I love you.
Hell yeah.
And that's all that matters.
Well, I guess we can quit the podcast because I got what I wanted all along.
A mommy. You're mommy. Susan. You just wanted a parent.
Fuck.
But I'm better than Addison.
Yeah.
I reign supreme. I feel like that was mostly that scene, really,
right? That was
mostly
that scene. I would say it would have been a little sadder for me if the underscore wasn't so fucking ominous and spooky sounding.
Really spooky.
Like, that is like a very rough and hard thing to talk about. And so just imagine me talking about what I just did talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But underneath it was like, do 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 do.
The scoring is a little bonkers sometimes. Yeah.
What I did wasn't scary at all, but
whatever. I was terrified.
Okay, good.
I'm shaking in my little house shoes. Then we cut back to the office, and Ed has kidnapped his own daughter. He has a real baby in his hands.
Yes, he has a real toddler.
This is the real toddler. The reveal that Mindy is not just a one-armed doll with Sharpie on her face. And I immediately was like, this is not going to go over well. Because also, so he kidnapped his own daughter. He approaches Lynette and is like, here's the baby of mine that I kidnapped.
I thought he was gonna leave and like Fran was gonna come in and be like, you fucking stole my baby.
But Fran is in the elevator coming up as well, so was she literally like 45 seconds behind him in travel time?
Probably.
How did they do that? Was she just driving behind him on the freeway and then they parked next to each other? She ran behind him.
She could have saw him like drive away and just like ran out to like if they have two cars.
I guess. Yeah. I just thought it was like weird how quick behind him she was.
Yeah.
But we needed it for the story because then Fran comes up and Ed and Fran start screaming at each other. So what does Lynette do?
Lynette kidnaps the kidnapped baby.
We're
double napping. She locks herself in her office and says, I'm going to hold this baby hostage until you two work all your crap out.
Get your fucking marriage on lock before I come out with this baby. Before this door unlocks.
Yeah.
Get your shit on lock. And Lynette gives them like marriage advice. She basically becomes their marriage counselor. And the core of it is she just says, hey, two adults who engaged in a legal bond with one another, maybe you should communicate with each other, speak words, and figure out what the other person needs and the boundaries that need to be set. And they were like, what? Mm-hmm. You can do that in a marriage? And Lynette fixes their marriage in a moment.
Yeah.
Lynette immediately fixes their marriage.
Yeah.
That's kind of the whole scene.
That is the whole scene. And then we go to the ward.
The ward. The psych ward. The psych ward.
The only psych ward.
To ever exist.
And will ever exist. We see Betty. She is talking to a receptionist. And she's talking about piano playing. It's kind of unsure in this moment if she wants to teach people piano or just play for them. And yeah, that's about it.
She's like pretending to be from a spiritual outreach program.
Yeah.
And that's sort of just the peppering of what we're going to see later. Mm-hmm. But first we've got to cut to comedy queen Susan.
Susan. She's in the grocery store, sees Carol.
Carol.
Carol tries running away, but Susan follows and is like, please, I need to talk to you. And then the comedy comes in because Carol starts chucking goods at Susan.
She goes, hey, okay, here's a joke for the lesbians in the audience. You ready?
Sure.
Carol goes, my groceries flung out of space.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Thank you. I'll be here for the rest of the series. That was my joke specifically for lesbians, referencing the film Carol. Back to the scene. You take it away, Liz.
Oh, thank you so much. Hey, everyone. My name is Liz. This is my type 5. Comedy legend Susan. Don't you just hate it when she... Sorry.
What's the deal with Susan?
What's the deal with Susan outing herself as gay and a daughter?
Me. I stand before you here today. Gay and a daughter of a mother. Okay.
You coming out to your mom.
my mom's like, okay. Basically, yes, Susan is like, Addison's my dad. I'm not sleeping with him. He's my father. Carol stops immediately. This scene, actually, we were making so much fun of it. It's actually very sad.
It's a very sad scene because Carol stops and takes a second and she asks how old Susan is, which Susan is 38. And then we find out that Carol and Addison have been married for 39 years.
He has been cheating from the very beginning.
Yeah. And who's to say not even before?
Yeah. Who's to say Gilfie was the first person? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's a sad moment for Carol. Like, this poor woman is clearly trying and has tried for 39 years to make this marriage work. And he has just been stepping out the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
That just sucks so bad to invest that many years of your life. You only have one life, and that is at least close to half of it. Let's say you live to be 100. That's almost like, that's 40% of your life dedicated to a person who has treated you terribly the whole time. Like, it's just, that sucks for her. And Carol warns Susan that, like, he's gonna break your heart, so maybe you should get out of this. And I want Susan to take Carol's advice so bad.
Yeah. And then we quickly go to Bree. She is talking to Andrew. She wants to go to family therapy. He really doesn't want to.
Mm-mm.
She just wants to try to be a family again with her only child, Andrew.
Where is Danielle?
She's out with Matthew somewhere.
Is that just the assumption that if we don't see Danielle, which is all the time, that she's just with Matthew?
She's with Matthew, or she's working on her modeling career.
She's gonna be a model.
Yeah.
What if that's the spinoff? What if they gave Danielle a modeling spinoff? Like how they gave Joey one on Friends.
I just had a scary thought.
What's a scary thought?
I've been joking about Julie getting pregnant in a late season. What if Danielle gets pregnant? Like, she's a teen mom.
They're like, we don't know what to do with this character. Let's knock her up.
And then Julie still gets pregnant in season 7 or
Everyone
8.
Gets pregnant. What if there's a plot where every single person in the lane is pregnant? Like that movie that, like, what's that
I told
scary?
You recently, I had a dream where you were talking about late, like, Desperate Housewives stuff, and I went, I can't believe Susan is pregnant. I can't believe we're going to see a pregnant Susan at
your
some
dreams,
point.
Hey, hey, hey. As everyone knows, this is a spoiler-free podcast. I have to keep my little poker face at all times, but I do think it's funny that your dream is, like, trying to slip poison in your ear. So, to not confirm or deny.
Okay.
But... the big part of that scene is, I don't remember how they get from family therapy to Andrew saying he wants to kill George, but I think Andrew is basically saying the only way he would ever feel closure about his father's death is if he could make George pay for what he did. And he notes he doesn't think suicide is justice, because though he is dead, he got to go out on his own terms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the important part of what prompts Bree to do something kind of big next.
Yeah, Bree kind of goes... if you know he suffered, would you be okay? Would you be willing to move past this? Okay, well, I watched him die. I saw the life leave his eyes, and I saw his soul astral project out of his body and go to hell.
And Andrew goes,
oh, Mommy, thanks for telling me this. I won't use it against you at all, Mommy.
and hugs Bree. And I immediately thought, little evil prince, who I love, is going to use this against her.
Yes. He's
been wanting since last season to get her on something. And she just told him she, like, was an accessory to assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Is that even what you would call what she did? I don't really know what... Mm-hmm. I mean, she didn't really do anything.
I don't know.
Who knows? He has something on her, and he seems happy about it.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the psych ward.
The psych ward. Betty is playing the piano for the patients. They're super into it. And then we see Monroe.
Monroe comes in, and he's disguised as a nurse, and he's readying a needle, and he's trying to find out where John Doe, aka Caleb, is. And he sees that Caleb is in the audience of the people watching Betty play piano.
And now seems like an opportune time, because everybody's paying attention to her piano.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts making his way, and then we see... both us and Monroe see Matthew in the back of the room wearing a hat and jacket. And he quickly takes it off, puts them on Caleb, and starts escorting him out of the building.
And Monroe lets him go because, I mean, really, he can't do anything without drawing attention. So he has to let them walk by.
Yeah.
What kind of fucking security is this place? That not only a person who is not a nurse can walk in and be a nurse... but that Matthew can just walk in and take Caleb with him.
All I'm saying is it's called the psych ward and not the guarded psych ward.
You're right. If it was the guarded psych ward, Mike would have said they went to the guarded psych ward.
Yeah,
you're right. I'm the idiot here. I don't know. All I do know is that we cut to Paul going to Mike's house to let him know that the prodigal son, Zachary, has returned.
Mm-hmm. And you better stay away from my baby boy.
Better back the fuck off, Mike.
Because we're moving.
He has said the phrase, we're moving, I think 28 times.
Sadly, it's higher than the Susan death count.
And the Susan job count.
Yeah.
I think the highest count of anything in the world is Paul saying we're moving. I feel like that man is moving every other episode.
Yeah.
And they never move.
Paul kind of threatens Mike by saying, we're moving and you can't do anything about it because if you try, I'll call the police. And Mike says, well, if you move, I'll call the police. And I don't care.
Yeah. And they're sort of at the standstill because either one of them could get both of them in trouble. But they both also realize that, like, if both of them go away, Zach doesn't have a dad in any capacity. And so I think they're sort of at this standstill of Mike agrees to stay away as long as they don't move so that Zach is still close by.
Yeah. I think the storyline is really interesting in regards to, like, it's kind of the total opposite of Susan's storyline right now, where she really wants to be close with her dad, but her dad does not want that relationship. Mike really wants to be close with his son, but his son doesn't, like, know that he's his dad, so... right now, I guess he doesn't have any thoughts about whether he wants that kind of relationship or not.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting to have, like, a father figure not be interested in a kid who really wants them to be. And, like, a dad who really wants a relationship with their kid, but outside forces are telling him he can't be.
Yeah. I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is that maybe Mike and Paul should get together.
Oh, my two dads.
My two dads and be and co-parent together and be husbands.
Yeah, I agree.
Does anyone ship Paul and Mike, you think?
They must. I saw.
Pike. Maul. Both weapons.
And then we go to the hospital. And the hospital. Carlos is filling out a form because he has to get shots for...
Botswana.
Yeah, for Botswana. And they are arguing... And
it's the same argument.
Yeah.
And he basically tells her, like, you can either help me or you can get out of my way because you're not going to stop me, Gabby. Take my little clippy board and I'm going to go get shots.
Yeah. And when she tries to hand it off to the receptionist is like, you need to really finish filling this out because if he has allergies, there are things in certain medications that can, like, get him really sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like eggs,
which he's allergic to, which is fucking funny to me that Carlos is allergic to eggs.
Yeah.
And Gabby kind of flippantly mentions that. But then the nurse is like, well, if he actually is, then he'll react poorly to the yellow fever vaccine. So is he? In little liar Gabby.
She does a conscious onions.
She does. Oh, my God. Yeah. What? Yeah. Like the Brie onions?
Yeah. Like the Brie onions, which she does consciously.
Yeah, you're right. She does do a conscious onions because then we immediately see that Carlos is suffering in the bed because she lied about the allergies and he is having a very bad allergic reaction to the yellow fever vaccine.
Yeah. And she starts kind of going into this weird talk about, like, I'm worried that if you're not obsessing over me and being aggressive
and self-centered and
you don't love me anymore, which is, like, problematic in its own way. But she's also expressing that she is worried that he doesn't love her anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not doing it in a good way.
Yeah, she's not. But she's basically expressing, like, the people we are or were so in tune with one another and, like, knew how to be with one another. And I don't know how to be with this person who maybe doesn't love me anymore and is so unlike me. And he just wants to be held. And but who does he want to be held by?
Mary.
I fucking screamed.
Oh my god, I have goosebumps.
The howl I let out.
Oh, I have goosebumps.
The howl that came out of my body when he said Mary's name.
I want to kill him.
Do it.
Gabby just poisoned her husband, me. I want to kill him.
So that was wild.
Yeah.
And then we cut to my final lesbian of the episode
nominee. Susan Painting in the Rain.
Susan Painting in the Rain. That
I had that too. I wrote that too.
We're so in sync. That outfit was very gay. That was my final nominee for lesbian of the episode.
Yeah.
Do we have a full bucket? A full pool? Do we want to go ahead and figure out who we want?
Reach in like the soul pool from Scooby-Doo 1.
We have Lime Diet Coke, Lynette's biceps, lesbian nuns.
Lesbian nuns. Mary by herself.
Mary by herself. Or Mary and Gabby wanting to kiss, kind of.
Yeah.
And then Susan? Edie. And then Susan. I'm drawn to Lynette's biceps, if I'm being honest.
To be honest, I'm drawn to Diet Coke.
What? Diet Coke feels more gay to me than, like, lesbian of the episode.
But it's a lime Diet Coke.
Are we at a standstill?
Lesbian. It has three of the same letters as lesbian does lime.
I don't know if lime inside Diet Coke has sold me. Let's do an Instagram poll.
Okay.
And so the audience, for the first time ever, really, you decide what the lesbian of the episode is between Lime Diet Coke and Lynette's biceps. So when this episode airs, when you're listening to it, go over to our Instagram and vote for what you want the loat to be.
Hell yeah. And we'll announce it at the top of next episode.
Hell yeah.
But for now, we have to go back to Susan and Papa Addison, because he's back.
Yeah.
He comes up trying to get on her good side a little bit. He has, like,
weirdly,
an umbrella and is like, do you need it? Here. This is such a wild scene because it's such a shift in Addison's character that
makes sense.
I would have liked to have seen.
Yeah.
And not just be told this.
Yeah.
But essentially the scene, he says that he's proud of her and that he needs to, like, he can't have a relationship with her now but he's going to go home. He's going to try to work on his marriage. And then after that is situated, he'll give her a call.
It just feels like too stark of a shift in his character. And also, like, it's been 39 years and you haven't wanted to work on your marriage. Like, why now of all the times your wife's probably caught you cheating?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. I'm like, not charmed by him or won over by him in this scene.
It
felt cheap.
It wasn't played as if he was trying to just get on her good side anyway. Like, the way the actor was playing it was, like, weirdly genuine that,
yeah,
like, doesn't make sense for Addison right now.
No,
to me.
We didn't see growth in Addison. Yeah. The last time we saw him, he was, you know, just arrested. Like, that was, like, the last scene we got with him. And yeah, we didn't see the growth, so this didn't feel warranted to me, this scene. And I wasn't as won over as I wanted to be. And I think that's, like, I don't know. I'm glad the boundary is set. It's like a slow boundary of, I need to do this, and then we can maybe connect. And
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that means Susan gets some distance from it, because I just don't think this is good for Susan right now.
No. Desperate mother, am I right? We then get our ending Mary Alice monologue.
Yeah, Mary Alice is giving her final monologue about stories as old as time. And she asks us, why do we listen to these stories again and again? It's because these are the stories of family. And we like to remind ourselves that nothing is as important as family. And she sort of gives examples like the prodigal son, she goes into the jealous wife, which is Gabby, and the desperate mother, as you said, which is Betty. The faithless husband, Addison. And I forget what they said, but they did. There was a moment of Lynette seeing her daughter, maybe just like mothers and daughters. And
there was a moment of Bree looking as if she's happy to be connecting with Andrew, but Andrew definitely has like a little ominous smile, a little twirling
mustache.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's basically the final monologue is talking about how these are the stories of family, which is kind of interesting because I feel like those are the stories of the show. Like, this show revolves around these families, both biological and found, because I would consider the ladies' relationships to each other to be found family. And so it's interesting how the show almost talked about how, why do we listen to these stories again and again? It's because we love Desperate Housewives because of the stories of family. That's like the end of the episode. And that's like us. That's why you all listen to this podcast. Because we're a family.
When you're here, you're family.
Welcome to Olive Garden.
We're sponsored.
We're sponsored by
Olive Garden.
And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
We made it to the end of the cursed episode.
Finally.
Oh, I can't wait to put 210 behind us.
Yeah, me too.
With good audio that didn't get ruined. And we did it. I'm proud of us.
I am too.
So thanks for listening to Wisteria Gaze. If you want to find us on Twitter and Instagram, you can find us at Wisteria Gaze on Twitter and at Wisteria Gaze _ on Instagram, as well as our website, WisteriaGaze.com or Wisteria.gay, our new domain that we bought.
Yeah. And also on that website, you can find links to our Patreon, which we talked about earlier in the episode, as well as our merch page. So go check out our website.
Yes, and under the Connect section on our website, you can find a link to our community Discord.
Yes.
So you can join that if you have a Discord account, or you can make one. It's super easy. And then you can come to kind of like, it's like a little like group chat area where like fans of the show and us all just talk about the podcast, talk about the TV show, share fun stuff. If you want to connect with us and other fans of the pod, come join the Discord.
Hell yeah. We'd love to have you.
Hell yeah.
One of the patron rewards that we do is shout outs at the end of every episode. So we're just going to shout out our new patrons that we got.
We got a bunch of new patrons in the last week. Yeah. So thanks for joining. I want to shout out Alex.
Alan.
Annie.
Cheryl.
Elise.
Lisa.
Liv.
Rebecca.
Tom.
Thank you so much for being patrons. Thank you for supporting the show, supporting us. It means a lot to us.
Yes, you're all awesome. Thanks for joining and thanks for supporting the show.
Hell yeah. Something else I really like to do in my free time is read reviews.
What?
Not only of other podcasts, but of my own.
Whoa.
And at the end of every episode, we usually pose a question to just get the review juice flowing in your brains. Mm. And this week, I think it should be,
what would you spray paint on Susan's garage door.
Oh my god. That's
Does
really
that
good.
Open up too much toxicity amongst the We Hate Susan fandom?
No, because I don't think it has to be hateful. It doesn't have to be hurtful.
Because I think what I would spray paint is, I'm worried I'd take yours, because I think I'd spray paint Marry Me.
Oh,
that's
no.
That's how I'd propose. Mine, I'd propose by saying I would spray paint Marry Me on Susan's garage door. Yeah. She would join me in Edie's marriage.
Yeah.
So it would be like a trio marriage, but okay. The three of us would be married together. Yeah.
Mine would be New York, New York.
Yes. With the little music notes next to it. Oh, hell yeah.
A full mural of this New York skyline.
Yes.
No, a full mural of the Chicago skyline, but it says New York, New York.
That's even better. So when you leave us a review, let us know what you would spray paint on Susan's garage door.
Hell yeah. Other than that, you can find me, Liz, on any form of social media at The Pigeon Wizard.
You can find me, Mackenzie, at Mackenzie Wilkes.
Hey, Mackenzie.
What's up?
I love you.
Freaking love you, dude.
Yeah! Stay juicy, everyone.
Stay juicy.